Welcome back to the Roundtable. 9:15 on a Wednesday morning. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. It's the Wednesday before Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving Eve. It's our panel here. Everybody getting into position. We have Rosemary Armeo, who is a regular fixture here. Alan Shartok, also a regular fixture, or an irregular fixture. Chris Churchill of the Times Union. Terry Gibson, SUNY New Paltz Communications Professor, former New York State Senator. Also, in the little kid's chair today, Judy Patrick, who's Vice President for Editorial Development at the New York Press Association. You know, Thanksgiving, the little kid always either gets a table or a little kid's chair.
Exactly. That's exactly how I feel.
Judy, you've been bad. You get the little kid's
chair.
I'm
about a foot lower than everyone else.
That's all right. But you know what?
There is the children's table.
A chair is a chair.
Right. We'll get you a bigger chair.
I'm fine.
You know what? We'll get you the tallest chair.
I've been in the tall chair before. It's not any more fun than the short chair.
Okay. You want a telephone book?
I need three.
No?
You feel powerful in the tall chair. Like you're,
That's great. Well, I'm glad you're all here. You know, it's Thanksgiving tomorrow. Everybody ready?
Yes.
Yeah? What are you guys doing?
I'm going home to make pies.
Yeah? Whoa, what kind of pie?
I'm making pumpkin and chocolate. Even though there's some objection to the chocolate, I've got little kids coming and I think they'll like the chocolate.
Tell me about chocolate pudding.
No. It's like a gelatin. It's whip it a lot. It's almost like a chiffon. It's really it's a lot of dark chocolate in it. And I'm trying to make my young grandchildren, who are 2 and 4, like pie. And I think chocolate is the way to introduce them.
You need to come on Food Friday.
They don't like pie as it is?
Yeah, right?
Well, you know, little kids. They love chocolate. I think they might eat a pumpkin pie, but I know they'll definitely eat the chocolate.
Yeah. Mm. You need to come on Food Friday and bring some pies.
We buy our pies at the wonderful Taft Farms over to Great Barrington. The only reason I mention them is that the Great Barrington Selectmen somehow let the bridge go that goes over to there on Division Street. So as a result of that...
You never mentioned this before.
You're going to have to float the pies across the stream?
Yes. Pontoon bridge for the pies.
As a result of that, you got to go around the long way, and they need all the help they can get.
And you're making I heard you're making a turkey tomorrow.
I am. I'm getting up very early in the morning. I'm going to make it with the aluminum foil over, you know, the tent way.
Yeah. Now, you know, we had an expert on last week, and she said, don't do that.
Why not?
Because on account of the skin.
Your brain will go soft.
No. If you like the crispy skin, you avoid the...
Well, you take it off at the end, and you make it crispy. Everybody knows that. I've been making turkeys.
She's an expert. She worked for Martha Stewart. I mean, I would, you know, defer to her.
Where'd she learn? In the penitentiary?
Oh. Really? Okay. Well, let's just get to it then. The email address is panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. A reminder, if you write us, letters brief, paragraph maybe, you know, 1.27 paragraphs at the most. Don't include links. Don't include attachments. No abbreviations. Proofread, for heaven's sake. If it doesn't make sense to you, boy, it really won't make sense to us. So panel@wamc.org. Well, before we get into the news of the day, if anybody traveling here?
Yes.
You're driving though, right?
Yes.
Well, you going far away?
I'm going to Saratoga today to celebrate my wife's birthday.
Congratulations and happy birthday to your wife.
Yes, she's here with me this morning, and we're heading up as soon as we're done to celebrate.
And drop in on the great Joe Donahue in Saratoga Hospital.
Oh, is that where he is?
That's where he has
maybe
been.
We should stop by and say hi.
Yeah.
We discussed, your wife and I discussed coffee and cocoa. Briefly.
How'd that go?
It was a very interesting conversation.
It's as substantial as this conversation.
Wow. Oh, really? Oh, okay. Well, thank you, our referee, Rosemary.
You're impatient over there.
That's good. Well, you got 2 hours, so just cool your jets there, all right?
Terry's got a wonderful wife.
Yes, I do. Yes. Thank you for pointing
He's got a
out.
Wonderful wife. She functions as his ethical consultant.
Okay.
So I don't think I need an ethical consultant, but it's always good to have backup.
Well, the reason I asked about the traveling was that we some just terrible weather. If anybody is flying, especially out west, prepare for delays. A bomb cyclone is already causing trouble out there. We have, meanwhile, the New York City parade, the Macy's Thanksgiving Day parade. Possibly, quite possibly, no big balloons this year.
Yeah. I've heard that before, by the way, and it doesn't turn out.
There's a thing.
It's a bomb cyclone.
It's a weather phenomenon expected to simultaneously topple trees, knock out power, and dump snow. You know, you call it whatever you want.
A big storm will do.
the house you did, they have to sell, okay? They have to sell advertising on the Weather Channel. Give me a break.
It's so unlike you to be a weather alarmist. You know, you're not usually like that.
Well, I'm learning from Dave Gastina after all these
Gastina
years.
Gastina is our resident weather alarmist. Yeah.
All I'm saying is if you're traveling, leave extra time. And, you know, now we'll get down to business. Okay, Rosemary?
Thank you.
Thank you. The House Judiciary Committee is set to take over the impeachment probe of President Donald Trump, scheduling hearing for next week as they push closer to a possible vote on actual charges of high crimes and misdemeanors. The Judiciary panel scheduled the hearing as the separate Intelligence Committee Tuesday released two last transcripts from its depositions, including from a White House budget official who detailed concerns among colleagues as Trump ordered them through intermediaries to put a hold on military aid to Ukraine. Intelligence Committee's wrapping up the investigative phase of the probe. Adam Schiff said the report could be released soon after the House returns from its Thanksgiving break. I think they return on Tuesday. There is an initial hearing scheduled for Wednesday. Well, there you go. Rosemary, you want it? It's all yours. It's news.
Okay. I'm glad they're moving ahead. I think that the Democrats have a big problem in trying to figure out the pacing of this. If you remember when we first started talking about impeachment, we wondered on this program whether it would be finished by Thanksgiving. And some of us scoffed. Others said, no, no, they'll move it right along. And I think as we keep seeing, it gets deeper and deeper. And the trick is to keep going down further. Those two new transcripts you mentioned show that people in the OMB quit rather than put up with and help the freeze that the president ordered. That's new information, really interesting. So I don't know. I will be eager to see how Nadler handles this when it comes to him. What will he do different than Schiff? How will the debate change? It looks like at first they're going to just have like a primer on what is impeachment and what it means. It looks like a history lesson.
Now, I have no idea. Is this going to be an open hearing? In which case, I assume we'll be covering it.
Yes, I didn't know myself. You know, I'm the last to know around here. But, you know, it may well be that we'll be off.
I don't think we know yet.
It's a Wednesday. Yeah.
But there's no way this is not going to last, I think, now into the new year. And that means into the cycle of the Democratic primary. So that's very interesting. Do you think it'll hurt or help the Democrats running?
It's hard. It's hard to say right now. It doesn't. It's so difficult to say. And then when you factor in Bloomberg entering the race, that just takes all of this a whole different direction as well. So the polls right now seem to be showing that everybody continues to be locked in where they were months ago on this. And there's still that group in the middle, that independent group in the middle that seems like they could be swayed one way or the other.
Haven't been yet.
Not yet, but that doesn't mean they can't be.
If they haven't been yet, though, are they going to be? I mean, it doesn't seem likely at this point.
No.
But what's interesting is that five or six of the candidates will have to leave the campaign trail for a month.
You would think.
You know, I mean, that can't
help
them.
They're jurors.
Yeah, right. So, I mean, that could be an advantage for the three or four candidates left in Iowa.
It's funny, Alan.
Really dominate the conversation.
We've talked about just this, and Alan, I think you have a different opinion on that.
Well, it's not that Chris is ever wrong; he's not. But because I read his column, I know. But I do think that there is a difference here. It may well be that when somebody becomes a juror. And they're in there, and they're interviewed by somebody from CNN coming out. That they get more publicity than they would get in a million coffee shop visits in New Hampshire. So they might do better. I don't know.
They get more national publicity, but they're not on the ground in Iowa, right? Which I think is what would hurt them. I mean. This isn't a national race, it's an Iowa race. Yeah. And I think if you are getting your face on the front page of the Iowa newspapers because you're at the local coffee shop, that's probably better for you than, you know, being on CNN.
Well, you're always right. I know that.
But my
question here is, you mean that they don't have televisions in Iowa?
No, they do. But I still, in states like Iowa and New Hampshire, people like the personal contact and that, you know, that has been shown in past elections to really help to really help candidates.
Yeah. One thing I like about Bloomberg being in the race is that he's skipping all those little small states at the beginning.
And he's just going to spend $1 billion and that's the way to do it?
At the $1 billion, I don't know if that's the way to do it, but getting out of there and not letting them have this hold on the race is really a great idea. How come Iowa gets to pick?
Or New Hampshire. Right. There are 50 states, and on Super Tuesdays, there are a lot of delegates that will be awarded, and nobody's paying attention to any of those other states.
I agree with the concern, and I think they could move the states around a little bit. On the other hand, though, if you do make it more of a national contest, anybody who doesn't have just a ton of money is not going to have a chance to compete. One of the things that's great about Iowa and New Hampshire is that you can go in there and kind of build it from the ground up.
They all are multi-million dollar campaigns, Chris. That horse has left the barn.
Yeah, but they become multi-million dollar campaigns. They don't start that way. Like a guy like Andrew Yang or somebody who is kind of growing the campaign. I mean, Bloomberg just can come in with his billions and just blow everybody away with advertising, but a lot of the candidates can't do that.
You know, Joe Biden doesn't have a lot of money compared to some of these other candidates, and it's interesting that today's polling is showing him way out in front again.
Yeah, it is. This whole discussion, I think, points to the fact that Democrats, I think, actually have a much bigger problem to worry about than the impeachment trials, and that is that they still don't have an identifiable candidate that solidly is hanging on to the lead. There was a Gallup poll that came out earlier this year, I believe, that showed that what has happened is that the roles have switched. Democrats now care much more about the character when it comes to their candidates than they used to. And Republicans now care more about policies than character than they used to, which explains a lot of the Trump support. And Democrats, I think, really have to start focusing on the character of a candidate. What candidate can present the type of character that Democrats and the independents would really vote for and support? And they're not doing that right now. They're spending too much time talking about policy. I think it's a big mistake.
Is it really a problem, though, that they don't have a candidate lined up now? I mean, we're still a year away from the general election. I don't know why we have to rush, you know.
Well, we're not rushing.
No, that's true. That's true.
There's no rush. Yeah. I mean, there's still time for other people to jump in if they want.
I think that was one of the problems with Hillary Clinton's campaign, was she was perceived as chosen way too early and didn't get enough candidates an option to challenge her.
I saw a headline somewhere this morning that said, "Peaking too soon." It was about Elizabeth Warren.
Yeah, you talk about that with runners often. You don't talk about candidates usually.
Yeah, because she's dropped down now significantly.
How come?
Maybe she did peak too soon. I think one of her mistakes is what I was just saying. She spent an awful lot of time talking about policy. She's brought out a plan for everything.
She got a lot of credit for that, by the way.
Well, some gave her credit. Some gave her criticism, because the problem with rolling out plans for everything is it opens yourself up for criticism for everything because you're providing so many specifics. And I think in many ways that's damaged her.
I think it's very sexist, to be perfectly honest with you. The criticism I've heard, and maybe that's just in some of the people I've talked to, that she waves her hands around too much, and she
Bernie.
Yeah,
come on.
That's why I said the word sexist.
I don't think she's falling in the polls because she waves her hands around too much. I think Terry's probably right. I think she did leave herself open for criticism on certain things, and
by saying what she's going to do. I mean, isn't that what a politician should do? Is say, hey, here's what I'm going to do.
Right, you are, Ray.
No, I mean, we are having, here we are, a year away from the election, and we're having minute debates about how to fund Medicare for all, as if that's a given that we're going to even have that. It's a crazy discussion. It's all theoretical and abstract. It's hurt the debates. I think it's hurt all the candidates, not just her.
I agree.
And that's exactly what Terry's saying. But
right, and she didn't have to stake out that position.
She didn't.
Right.
She did not.
No, she thought she did. She thought she did. She said, that's the way that I get to the head of the pack, by saying Medicare for all, and that people will say, that you're doing the courageous thing here.
She could have said Medicare for all. That would be fine. That would stake out a position. But then when it was like, how are you going to pay for this? She could have said, look, we all know that the president doesn't get to decide totally. We may have to do it gradually. We may do it all at once. We don't have to decide that right now.
You should be running for president.
I should be the communications person for one of these.
I would pity the reporters who had to talk to you on a bad day.
I would have handled her completely differently. Holy cow. Whoa. She would have been out there saying, oh, I have pneumonia. You know, I've been working my butt off for you people, and I'm still going to be at 9/11, but I'm going to be sitting down. Please don't kill me for that. And she would have had everybody on her side. Instead, she hides it. She goes in, and she looks like she's lying. It's just ridiculous.
Terry Gibson, you were a New York State senator. We only have 1 minute before we have to hit the BBC. But, you know, did you make it a point when you were in to say, well, I'm not going to say what I'm going to do. I'm going to keep it very vague.
Well, to me, it's frustrating when you're not able to provide specifics. I think you do owe it to voters to provide specifics about what you want to do. But if we look at the history, we see that many people get elected to all types of offices, including president, without offering up specifics. So again,
is that preferable?
Well, you know, in politics, there are two roles. One is the role you play when you get elected, and the other is the role you play when you're a candidate. And
is
the
that
two
okay?
require different types of skills. Do you want to get elected? Well, then sometimes you are required to play in a game that requires you to answer questions in a way that aren't necessarily the way you would answer them when you're in office.
All right, well put, sir. We have to take a break here. This is all right. Everything's good. Everything's good. We're on track now. Rosemary's giving us a thumbs up. It's the panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. If you want to write us, we'll get to some of your letters coming up on the roundtable.
Something must be wrong.
Well, there's an anthem for our times. Hey, that's Room Full of Blues. What a great band. I remember, I go back with those guys. Duke Robillard used to be the guitar player back in the day.
Oh, yeah.
Remember Duke Robillard? No. Ronnie Earle sat in for a while after he left.
Yeah, I do remember him either.
Anyway, Room Full of Blues has been around for decades, and they're great. They're playing at the Iron Horse in Northampton on November 30th, Town Crier in Beacon on the 28th of December. And our playlist is always available online at WAMC.org/roundtable. And that's what you're listening to. It's the roundtable. Ostensibly not a music program, but we do like the music. It's 9:34. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. The roundtable panel is in session, and we're off to a rollicking start. Vice President for Editorial Development at the New York Press Association, Judy Patrick, is here. SUNY New Paltz Communications Professor, former New York State Senator, a reformed politician, Terry Gibson here, Times Union columnist Chris Churchill, investigative journalist Rosemary Armeo, Alan Shartok as well. Hello, everybody.
Hello.
Alan, we have a stack of letters. Put your device down and read a few letters, that would be tremendous.
No, I'm trying to stay ahead of all of this. Okay.
All right, fine.
Russ says, with the polls showing no movement as a result of the open hearings, Pelosi can only be thinking that the quick impeachment background without testimony from any of the principals in the scandal serves many to pin Republican senators to their votes. I like it. Over the course of the summer, further evidence of White House corruption might slowly pry away undecideds and leave senatorial candidates vulnerable to charge that they voted to shield malefactors from justice, but I would say leave senatorial Republican senatorial candidates as opposed to just senatorial candidates. Don't you see?
Right. I want to know what's the big rush. I think it's to the Democrats' advantage to stretch this thing out. It's like free publicity on all the broadcast networks and on all spring. And what's the rush?
Hasn't that been the philosophy since day one for 3 years? Hey, can you bring that mic up just a little bit,
don't
Judy?
Don't talk to her that way. She's grown substantially in number.
The mic was set for when she had the little chair. Now she has a grown-up chair. Good for you.
Okay. Antoinette says, impeachment timing. Hi, panel. Nancy Pelosi has been very clear that she's not going to send articles of impeachment to the Senate until it is a watertight case. No matter what the Democrats say, I don't think there will be an impeachment vote. Check your letters. An impeachment vote until the final count decisions about White House officials, testimony, and release of tax returns. Happy Thanksgiving.
Well, there may not be an impeachment vote at all. We don't know for sure that they'll go through with this, do we?
You got a feeling. You have to feel they will.
You got $5?
Yeah.
We got $5.
I mean, they probably will, but when you look at the lack of movement in the polls and even some backsliding in terms of people supporting this, she's putting her members are in an awkward position. People like Antonio Delgado are in a really awkward position.
Well,
they can, you know, if they vote for impeachment, they're potentially angering a lot of independents. If they vote against it, they're enraging their base or his base. So it's a you know, I wouldn't be at all surprised to see Nancy Pelosi back off and say we're going to go with a censuring rather than an impeachment.
What do you think, Terry?
Well, first of all, I don't think Antonio Delgado has an opponent right now on the Republican side, so he's looking really good.
No, he does.
So he may have more flexibility than we think he does when it comes to this kind of vote. I tend to think that taking their time, making sure that they have found all they can find, and allowing some of these people who are refusing to testify to maybe reconsider.
Such as Bolton,
yeah,
et cetera.
Yeah, I kind of tend to agree with Judy that rolling this out slowly, I think, is to their advantage, because once they stop this, it really gives the Republicans a chance to just command the news cycle once again. What are they going to talk about? So I don't think there's any
Except
need
that
to rush.
It's not the candidates who are commanding the news cycle when you're talking about impeachment. Although some, of course, we've mentioned will be jurors, they're not involved in any of this. Well, they're not talking about
it. None of the candidates are commanding the news cycle anyway.
Well, that's the problem with impeachment, is that you're stealing the thunder from your very good, very interesting presidential race. And the news cycle is dominated by news that—
By Trump
and by an impeachment process that the public does not seem that engaged with.
I have such immense respect for Chris.
Oh, no. Here we go again.
Second time he's done this.
Twice, I think. I'm going to get a T-shirt.
Nevertheless, you're dead wrong. They're going to impeach him, and that's it, period. And I got $5 I'll put on the table right here on that issue.
Well, as far as the trial goes, I mean, isn't this an opportunity for some of those senators who are running to make a big splash on a big stage? And perhaps, yeah, they can't be on the campaign trail, but, I mean, in this age of sound bites and media bites and little clips, somebody comes through with the right phrase.
I don't know, how much questioning do they get to do?
Where were you earlier in the show when I said exactly that?
Well, generally speaking, I'm focusing on other things at the time.
Oh, and you remember, I mean, how much questioning do they get to do?
I don't know.
I mean, do they have to sit there silently, or do they get to be an active participant in the process? Because if they can be active, then yeah, it could be a good publicity. But
Remember that they can walk outside the room and talk to Mashu, what's his name, the great guy, the great reporter for CNN, little guy.
I'm not sure.
I want to say Machu Picchu, sure, but it isn't. who's the big reporter who talks to the senators all the time?
Hervé Villechaize.
Machu Picchu. The big reporter, right?
But we do know Republicans will be controlling that process if it makes it to the Senate. So Democrats will have be much more limited than they have been in the House hearings.
Right, and they'll be calling Hunter Biden. They'll be doing a lot of things that will be difficult for the Democrats.
And then, you know, these hearings will start on Wednesday, at least the initial hearings of this next round. They're getting ahead of the IG report, which I think is coming on the 9th, and that goes back to Russiagate. And we don't know what that will say, but it will certainly bring that and the Steele dossier back to the fore.
And please forgive my ignorance, but are the same people going to testify before the Judiciary Committee?
Which would be deadly boring.
I don't think we know yet. I think it's unknown what's going to happen.
As Rosemary says, I think the first hearing is going to be about what is, in fact, impeachable. Yeah. I think that is what will be discussed.
I think Manu Raju is going to be asking that question to everybody.
You got the name. You got the
I didn't find it yet, but I all of a sudden came popping back into my head. Well, I love him. I think he should get the Pulitzer Prize.
I'm all for that. Let's do it. Interesting thing about these hearings with Jerry Nadler is that he has invited Donald Trump or his counsel to come and testify and come and answer questions.
That's grandstanding, right?
Well, I think it's also proper. I mean, I think he's required to do that, and I think he's trying to call the bluff, you know, on the president. So at least it'll be on record that he did invite them.
A bluff of a guy who won't come and won't let anybody else come, but complains that he's not being heard. Unbelievable.
Yeah. There's also new information coming out any day that Nadler could pick up on, and that includes the OMB, the budget and management people who quit in protest, which is an extraordinary thing. To leave a federal job with all those benefits because you don't approve of something the president's doing, I want to hear from them.
Yeah.
And I also want to respond to Chris. I was really disappointed to not see the polls move on impeachment. I thought some of the evidence was really really moving and striking, and it's impossible for me to think no one who said, oh, no, he shouldn't be impeached, didn't change their mind a little, and yet that's what it shows. However, there is 50% of the people say that they're in favor of at least an inquiry, if not removal, and that is an extraordinarily high number, way higher than you saw in Clinton or in Nixon, for example.
Right. I mean, the numbers I was looking at this morning looked at about 47, 43, or 45.
It's right around 50-50.
But what's interesting is when you break down the numbers, you have almost universal agreement among Democrats that he should be impeached, universal agreement among Republicans that he shouldn't, and independents are breaking against it, which I think is the key warning sign for people like Antonio Delgado or for presidential campaigns going into the 2020 election.
The male woman vote is interesting, too. That's women tend to be leaning, I think, towards impeachment where they were not before. But I'm surprised that it's that there was no movement at all.
Oh, the microphone. Thank you, sir. I'm a roadie now for Foghat. There you go.
I'm actually not that surprised because I just feel like this is a detective novel that's backwards. I think the big news came at the beginning that morning when we were all sitting here reading that transcript online. It was like that was the revelation. And then ever since, it's just been confirming it and confirming it and confirming it. We're not getting – it's just building. It's not building. It's kind of deflating, it feels to me.
Before we get to the next letter, and we have a stack of them, just let me ask the panel, is the media and the public in general, are the media and the public in general, too reliant and too addicted to polling? Every day there is a new poll. There are several polls. There are five more out today. There'll be 10 more out tomorrow. Are we too poll crazy? Is it now becoming just a horse race?
I agree with you so entirely, Ray.
That was only a question.
I think we're too obsessed with it. It's horse race discussion, and I'm like, I don't believe polls anymore. After the 2016 election, I'm done with polls.
But the polls got the 2016 election accurate. I mean, they were dead on with it. They predict, if you look at the polls a week before the election, they said Hillary would win by about 3%, and she did. What they didn't get right was the distribution, but that's a different question. I think I agree with you about horse race coverage when it comes to the presidential campaign, that there are too many polls. But when you're talking about impeachment, isn't it somewhat important to know what the public thinks?
Yes, and I'll bet the candidates themselves are looking at polls all the time.
They do much more polling than the media does. They do internal polls constantly.
Yeah.
But every poll has its error. Let's talk about what the polls will do a week from now after everybody's gotten together with their family and had these long discussions about what's going on in Washington and see if that changes anything.
If Uncle Irving changed any minds around.
Exactly.
Oh, Uncle Irving's invited again?
Yeah, Uncle Irving's invited.
How about one more letter, and then we'll take a quick break?
All right, whatever you say, boss.
All right, sir.
Jeannie says, Democratic candidates, all this bloviating about no clear leader in the Democratic primary is driving me nuts. Not one vote has been cast. Let the people decide.
All right. Let's take a break here. It's the roundtable. It is the roundtable panel. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, Chris Churchill, Terry Gibson, Judy Patrick. I'm Ray. I'm in for Joe. The email address is panel@wamc.org, and we will be back.
It's a blue, blue world where the sun don't shine. You're there hugging your pillow, feeling both too blind.
Welcome back to the Roundtable on a Wednesday morning. It's 9:46. It's the Roundtable panel. You can join the fun. Panel@wamc.org is the email address. Judy Patrick, Terry Gibson, Chris Churchill, Rosemary Armeo, Alan Chartok, all here. We have letters.
All right, just a couple more, and I know Sarah will be coming in with some others.
Okay.
Kevin says, forget Iowa. The national focus will be on Facebook and Twitter, followed by Fox with the New York Times and the Washington Post and NPR trailing far behind. And that's from Kevin. Not sure what that all means, but whatever it means, it means. And Rhonda says, primaries. Some of us are staying out of the fray because we have to be strongly for whoever wins, Rhonda.
All right.
That's interesting. Whoever, as long as it isn't Trump, we're for him. I think there's a lot of Democrats.
But
what
the letter writer is saying is, I don't want to have a candidate that I'm for.
Right.
I'll just let that happen. Yeah. I think, frankly, with great due respect to the letter writer, it's wrong. I think you have to express your preference, and that's how you get a strong candidate.
President Trump held a campaign rally, dubbed a homecoming rally, near Miami yesterday, continuing to lash out at the impeachment inquiry in a state that will be crucial to his 2020 reelection bid. The rally was Trump's first in the state since he officially moved out of New York last month from the Trump Tower. Now he's based at Mar-a-Lago in Palm Beach. Welcome home to Florida, the state's Republican governor, Ron DeSantis, told him.
I just want to remind everybody about Giuliani. When Giuliani was running for president, I think most people don't remember that, he thought he would go down to Florida and all the ex-New Yorkers would vote for him, and they didn't.
Well, we need more ex-New Yorkers in Florida. There's a lot there, but we need more. We need a lot more. So if anybody wants to move to—
Really? Will that help Bloomberg?
I'm more worried about it hurting Donald Trump.
You're hoping for an exodus from New York.
I want to defeat Donald Trump. So if New Yorkers moving to Florida is what it takes to do it, let's do it.
Oh, okay.
We should note that even though the president has canceled his Washington Post and his New York Times subscriptions, he apparently is still accessing the stories because he took a moment or many moments last night to criticize their coverage and again call the media the fake news.
You think he gets a free copy once in a while?
I think he is not paying for his news, which every American should be doing.
Ah, Judy Patrick. Back to that old trope, eh?
Or become a member of the local public radio station. I mean, you gotta pony up some money once in a while. Things aren't free. Reporters need to be paid.
Freedom is not free.
These are enemies of the people. He wants to persecute them, not support them, Judy.
Maybe provide free housing in the local jails.
Well, the email address here is panel@wamc.org. Panel@wamc.org. A U.S. judge in Oregon on Tuesday granted a preliminary injunction blocking a Trump administration proclamation that would require immigrants to show proof of health insurance to get a visa. U.S. District Court Judge Michael Simon said in a written opinion that the proclamation could not take effect while a lawsuit challenging its constitutionality makes its way through the courts. The proclamation issued by the president in October would only apply to people seeking immigration visas from abroad, not those in the U.S. already. Seven U.S. citizens and a nonprofit organization sued to prevent the rule from taking effect, saying it would block nearly two-thirds of all prospective legal immigrants. Did anybody see that news?
What percentage of legal immigrants do you think have health insurance? Like 1%? 2%? It does seem like an outrageous ask.
I think it's have health insurance or the ability to buy it when they get here. Yeah, or have a job lined up where they'll get health insurance.
The reason for this is to stop and limit immigration of all sorts, legal and illegal. And I think that when it goes on, this case goes on, it'll end up in the Supreme Court if they decide to take it. And once again, there'll be a ruling in favor of Trump because our policy is the president gets to decide this stuff. So basically, America is being shut down to immigration. You cannot come to America anymore.
You know, I understand the position that a lot of people don't like the idea that people are coming to this country and becoming a burden on the American taxpayer. But I think this is draconian.
Well, I don't know, Judy. You know, many countries, good countries, have a thing. If you want to move there, you got to show that you can afford to live there. And we're not only talking about Trump here, but we're talking about a lot of educated democracies which have the same kinds of rules. So it's something to think about.
Right. And you have and many times immigrants get sponsors in the local in the home country, and the sponsor pledges to support the person, or that if the person goes on the public assistance, that they will repay it. I think that's already in place.
Yeah. The evidence here does not support that this is anything needed. America is not struggling. Immigrants come to this country, and by and large, they get support for a short time, or they get it privately from the sponsors that Judy's talking about, and then they go on to be contributing citizens.
I agree
with
you.
And we are losing more than we are gaining by adopting this.
Yes,
because when they come in poor, they may not be able to afford their health care, but they have people who become devoted to the country. We saw people testifying about that in Congress this past week. They have ideas and smarts, and they give it to America. And we are throwing it all away for a supposed safety and money issue that does not really exist.
Well put. We heard from Linda from Hurley, who said, Alan, the CNN reporter, is Manu Raju. I already came up
he
with
did
that
come
one
up with
myself.
It. And let it be and known, he did not look it up.
No, I did not.
It was in your brain.
It was flowing around. I think the guy ought to get the Pulitzer because he's a brilliant reporter.
Even though you called him a little guy.
Well, he is little. I'm little.
Okay. All right.
That's the way it is.
Don't have to be touchy about it.
Well, you should know.
What?
Because, you know, you're always talking about how, you know, you always put these words in your sentence about little or short or small. We know
what?
That. We know. Don't give me that incredulous look.
You know what?
We know what you're
abbreviated.
Your Honor, I object. Let's move on.
Andrew says, Democratic candidate choice. The number one priority is to pick a candidate who can beat Trump. Let's be honest. The last Democratic debate, Biden came across as struggling to remember data and slow to react. Putting him on the stage with Trump would be a losing proposition. The Democrats have to be brutal and thoughtful in their choice, considering a range of capabilities going from a physical presence through ability to lead and snappy communication skills. But I don't see a name in here from Andrew. In other words, I see what we need. But
in other words, a specific candidate.
Yes. I don't see.
I mean,
that.
I think his thing is the big debate, right? Who's best to beat Trump? I think that's exactly right. What the Democrats are wrestling with.
Who you got, Chris?
Who's the best candidate to beat Trump?
Yeah.
Yikes.
Well, I think Biden's.
I think Biden probably. I mean, as weak as he sometimes looks.
His performance apparently did not hurt him in the polling, which I know we're having debates about the polling right now, but he is in the recent polling coming out as being substantially ahead again.
Ahead.
His performance was not that great, in my opinion, many others in that last debate. But we also know that the viewership of that debate was way down. There was not...
It's unwatchable.
You know who I think would beat Trump pretty? I think Cory Booker would. He has a lot of attributes that would make him very formidable, but for some reason he just has not caught on.
Well, let's talk about that for some reason part of your sentence.
Well, I don't know. I'm not sure why he hasn't. For voters, for
Sarah Rogerson talks about that all the time. Another panelist. She is a big fan, and she's right. He is compassionate and smart and experienced.
And well spoken. He's got a range of experience from being a mayor to being a senator.
Absolutely.
You know.
And yet he's always reminded, "Hey, I'm another mayor with a Rhodes Scholarship over here." He has to call attention to himself away from other candidates.
Yeah.
Why is that?
Yeah, I don't know.
So, well, why do you think it is, Rosemary?
Prejudice, I think, is part of it. I think he's not sparkly. He's not a Buttigieg, you know.
Prejudice
or
because he's black or because he's vegan?
well, I have the prejudice against that. No, because he's an Easterner, he's black, he's urban.
But all those things should help him in the Democratic primary. That doesn't really explain. I mean, black voters, by and large, are going with Biden. You know, to me, the Cory Booker thing is kind of a mystery. And Kamala Harris is a little bit of a mystery, too. Neither one of them has really taken off.
She seems more explainable to me. She took missteps in the debate. Booker hasn't. Booker has not made a mistake. He gets stronger in the debates.
It could just be that his whole kind of peace and love, everything is let's all be happy message just isn't resonating with the mood right now.
I think that you might be onto something there. He does spend an awful lot of time, as many Democrats do, because it's what we do. They think about the future. They talk about the future. They're thinking forward about what things can be if you elect me. And I think that oftentimes voters have a really difficult time envisioning what the future looks like. Even though you're telling me, we have a hard time seeing it. And I
because
think,
you can't see it. They can't be seen.
Right.
Unless you're Nostradamus.
And so I think he spends maybe, I think that has been part of it, is that he spent a lot of time trying to focus forward when a lot of voters just want to focus on the present. You know, one of the big differences in the way Republicans campaign and Democrats campaign is Republicans typically talk about the past. They very much talk about the past. That was very helpful to Donald Trump. Democrats are always talking about the future, and it does create challenges for Democrats.
Well, I think he's probably easily one of the most positive. His message is the most positive among the candidates, including Trump. And it just seems like anger resonates more now than positivity.
You know, we talk about Trump being as if he's really formidable in a debate. He's not. I mean, Hillary Clinton really knew her stuff and was sharp as a tack, and he was not.
But he did bully her.
He bullied her, but I don't think you need someone really sharp. And I mean, I think just because Biden missteps and has gaffes, I mean, listen to the president.
People don't care as much about gaffes as everybody. Yeah. Used
I don't think
assume.
People care about debates. I don't think they decide elections.
But
and they shouldn't.
But the question is, on this bullying question, who could stand up to Trump? Who could equally bully him? So to me, when I look at the field, I don't see anybody who would be a good
bully.
Maybe Kamala Harris, maybe not, if she had to. But I do know a bully, and that's Andrew Cuomo. And too bad he's not running, because that would be a very interesting
Elizabeth Warren
debate.
Could take him on in a minute, as far as bullying is our measure. She has the CEOs in Congress. She is great at that.
I see.
I don't know how it plays with the woman doing it. That's not the measure.
I mentioned Kamala Harris, didn't I, Rosemary?
Yeah, and she's a
yes
prosecutor.
No.
Yeah, you did.
Okay. I mean, and in fact, Warren did it on Hillary's behalf in 2016. I thought she was pretty effective. But I don't
think I don't
want to elect a bully as my next president.
Well, except that apparently his bullying of Hillary paid off.
I don't know about that. I mean, it's hard to know.
Oh, then that's President Clinton now, right?
Well, I mean, it's hard to pinpoint that one particular thing as the reason that he won. I mean, I think Rosemary's closer to the point where just debates don't matter that much.
All right, let's
something
take a break.
Really huge happens within them.
This is a rollicking conversation, and thank God there's another hour. Chris Churchill, Rosemary Armeo, Terry Gibson, Judy Patrick, Alan Chartok, Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. We'll be back. I love a little room full of blues. They'll be at the Iron Horse in Northampton on November 30th and the Town Crier in Beacon, New York on December 28th. Hey, this is the Roundtable Panel. It's 10:05 on a Wednesday morning. Rosemary Armeo, Chris Churchill, Alan Chartok, Terry Gibson, and Judy Patrick make up the panel today.
And you're there.
I am the facilitator.
Yeah.
And felicitator.
Yes.
Which I don't even know is an actual verb. Do some letters.
Okay.
I
was going to say something that would get me into trouble.
I'm glad you didn't, for once.
Yeah, okay. All right. John says, campaign versus office. Terry justified political duplicity. Yesterday, Joe Rogan and Tulsi made the exact opposite argument. That is one of the core divisions between the political establishment and new independent media. Terry?
I'm not quite sure I understand the question.
I know. Well, shall I read it again or not?
Oh, please do. Yeah. We have a lot of time.
Okay.
Okay. Terry just justified political duplicity. Yesterday, Joe Rogan and Tulsi made the exact opposite argument. That is one of the core divisions between the political establishment and new independent media. I think what is being said here is
what does the subject heading say?
I'd have to hear what Tulsi said.
I think it's about how you said that a candidate shouldn't really outline a lot of plans ahead of time, and that and then when they get into office, they do whatever.
Well, right. I'm not saying that you shouldn't. I don't think I said you should. I just think there are risks with when you do. The more details you provide as a candidate, it opens you up to more specific criticism. So it's a choice that you have to make. It can be a risky proposition.
Yeah,
and I think in Elizabeth Warren's case, some of the details she has provided have opened her up to criticism that may have hurt her. I don't necessarily have any evidence to support that, but I wouldn't advise any candidate not to give specifics, but I think you have to be willing to be criticized for those when you do.
Mm.
It's a choice.
Anyway, Judy. That's Judy. Judy. Impeachment next step. Worried that voters are getting fatigued from process and media coverage of impeachment due to short attention spans, needs to be at least a censure, capital letters. Hard to imagine enduring this chaos 4 more years under Trump. And that's from Judy.
Hmm. Hearing nothing, we move on.
You know, I think I'm hearing censure more and more, even from some Republicans who are raising the possibility of censure. I think that's ultimately what it's going to be.
Hmm. They're going to impeach him?
They won't impeach him, they'll censure him.
I thought they had a watertight case for impeachment.
Well,
it
they
seems
do.
Pretty, yeah. But as a practical matter, I think a censure is something that will live longer in the public consciousness than being acquitted.
Do you think the Senate would censure him? Because in other words, right now we know there's an impeachment on the table, which is going to happen, by the way, for all of you, you know, neighboring nabobs. He is going to be impeached. He's going to go to the Senate, and from what we know, he is not going to be convicted. If he is censured in the Senate, in the House, will he be censured in the Senate? Hell no.
Does any of that really matter? I mean, in the Clinton impeachment, did he not lose permanently his bar license? did it even matter to anyone? No one met. It didn't matter. He was still popular.
But if nothing happens to President Trump as a result of all this investigation, it will be a great campaign tool for him from March through November.
Either way, campaigns are going to use both sides of this. This is what it will be all about.
And what makes you think that censure would do any better?
Censure's better than nothing.
Censure would be bipartisan.
Well, but there'll be an appeal. No, it will not be bipartisan. The Republicans are not going to vote for censure, and they're not going to vote for impeachment.
Democrats aren't going to offer it unless it's bipartisan.
I'm telling you now, they won't. I put $5 on the table.
I would think that the censor option is a better option for Democrats that are in pivotal districts where they want an out without having to take a controversial vote. They can vote to censor without saying I voted to impeach. I don't think Republicans will see much difference if they're scared to vote against impeachment. They're going to be just as scared to vote for censor. It reads the same to Donald Trump. They're going to be a target. Anybody on the Republican side that votes against him is going to be a target of him on Twitter immediately.
You make the assumption that the Republicans are scared. Now, is it possible some of the Republicans say, well, this is not impeachable stuff here. This is not a likable guy like Mitt Romney. You can't tell me he's like, oh, Trump, what a great guy.
Rosemary, you want him impeached even if it hurts?
I want him impeached. I think that this is a constitutional process that even to let stand what he has done is dangerous, and it gives okay for him in a second term, which I'm sorry, I think is coming, and to all future presidents to do what he did, as it's fine.
So you would want him impeached even if it strengthens his chances of being reelected?
I think impeachment should be considered separately from the political considerations of voting for him. I mean, I listened to as much of the last debate as I could stomach, and everyone said, yes, we hate him, he's a horrible person, he should be impeached. But you have to do more than that. You have to have our own programs. So go do that. That's what's going to decide this election. It'll be the economy. It'll be ideas about health. I don't think it's going to be impeachment or not. That 50-50 has stood. And I think it will continue to stand. I think it's independent. And I would like a historical record set that this was not considered acceptable, that there will be forever a little asterisk by his presidency.
I agree with you.
I totally agree, too. Can you imagine the president we would be sending for the future presidents if a president can get away with this and not be impeached?
Exactly.
Censure just, to me, seems so inadequate to cover what has happened here. So I agree with Rosemary. I think they have to go through this impeachment or the party loses all credibility. And I think our entire system of government loses a lot of credibility.
Yep.
Yeah, I agree that for the long term, you need to set the standard that it's not okay to coerce a foreign government to investigate a political rival. Call it for what it is. But it's got to be practical or politically expedient. And I'm hearing from Republicans, it seems like, that they're mentioning censures, which makes me think that that's what's going to happen.
I think they have that on the table. I think you're right, Judy. They are talking about it more.
We've heard from Ray, who says, impeachment delay. Good morning, panel, and happy Thanksgiving to all. The problem with stretching out the impeachment hearings against the idiotic man-child of a president is there's more time to do ungodly amounts of damage to not only America but to the world. By the time he's removed from office, he will be in a cold war with not just Russia but also China, not to mention North Korea. Will even be more emboldened to do whatever they want. I got a few problems with this. There is no indication to me that he has anything but good, warm relationship with Putin and Russia. And I doubt with
the other big Cold War there. Big flaw is the idea that he'll be removed from office. I mean, the chances of that have become increasingly remote.
I would think so.
And I think the more time he is so focused on impeachment, he's not doing anything else but ranting, watching television, and tweeting about impeachment. He's not doing anything.
Which is one more good plus thing to say.
And pardoning a turkey, a couple of turkeys. But yeah, he's not doing much other.
Kevin writes on emoluments. Good morning. Why has there been no discussion in the impeachment hearings of Trump's blatant violation of the emoluments clause? Is that not impeachable? Well, anything is impeachable that you want to impeach a guy for. You can say that it's you can just say that this rises to that point. Nevertheless, I think the Democrats have decided that's one that would be more difficult to pin on him.
There's so many cases already in court by various advocacy organizations, civil rights organizations that are addressing this issue. It's the whole issue is tied up in multiple courts across the country. I think they're hesitant to get involved in that for that reason.
Well, and anyway, Rick and Otis says Florida. Alan, it wasn't Giuliani who got turned down by ex-New Yorkers in Florida. It was John Lindsay. No, it was Giuliani, too. I don't know. I don't remember Lindsay on that issue. Okay. Marilyn says roundtable. One reason why GOP voters haven't moved on impeachment is because they are being fed lies on a daily basis by members of Congress, and they are also a cult. The polling, in quotes, I've seen is that independent voters are slightly in favor. Additionally, these polls are small sample sizes. The GOP voted unabashedly for impeachment of Clinton for lying about an affair when public polling was in the 20s. Polls are in the 50s, and there is evidence coming out daily. The president is a clear and present danger, needs to be removed. Stop equivocating. The question should be, why do Republican representatives echo Russian propaganda? Why will they not honor their oath?
See, I don't think it matters what Republican voters think in this situation. We're so partisan right now that Democrats and Republicans are going to line up on either side. It's what independents think. And you need more than 45 or 50% of independents to be in favor of this if you're going to go forward with it. I mean, impeachment is inherently a political process. It's, you know, it's
correct.
If you don't have strong, and I mean much more than 50% support from the public, you can't do it.
I think we also have to always remember that when we're comparing the Clinton impeachment process to the Donald Trump impeachment process, they're just two different worlds, literally. The world of just the media alone was completely different back then. The amount of media sources you have to go to now to get your news has expanded beyond what anybody could have comprehended back then.
But what is similar is there wasn't strong public support for that either. I mean, if the polls then had said 80% of Americans were for it, it would have happened. And it's the exact same situation.
Impeachments have never occurred with a majority of Americans being in favor of it. Impeachment is not popular. We do not like the idea of our president being removed or any of our top leaders.
Even tricky Nixon.
Outside of elections. Yeah, Nixon was never higher than 30% favorable public support of getting rid of him after he had been put into office, may I remind you, in a landslide. After all the reporting again came out in newspapers, it didn't just come out in hearings. It was explosive to see it because of the media the situation that you're talking about. And we don't have that now. It's deadening rather than exciting.
Nixon stepped down, though, when it became clear that Republicans were going to stop backing him. And I would argue that those Republicans did that because they realized they were hearing from voters in their district that voters had had enough. And until that happens in this case,
I think that's not historically accurate. I think what they felt was these were different Republicans. These were Republicans, not Tea Party, you know, all the moderates are gone. There's just real partisans now. And at the time, you had Goldwater going to him and saying, look, you don't even have my vote. It was a principled vote by Republican senators that was scaring Nixon, not that there was a groundswell for his removal.
Well, I also think you have to ask yourself if President Nixon had had the equivalent of Fox News supporting him, backing him the way that Donald Trump does, would that whole dynamic have played out differently? So that's something that was very different. Another thing that's very different that's really a first is we've never had a president under impeachment or being even considered for impeachment that's had a Twitter account with 66 million followers on it. I mean, that is a microphone that is unprecedented. We have never had a president that's been able to communicate to the American public in a single channel in that manner. And I think that has to be considered when you're looking at differences in the various impeachment processes.
Yeah, I'd love to see some data on how many Trump supporters are actually on Twitter, because I don't think there are that many.
Yeah, I don't think anyone actually sees his tweets. I think that his tweets are amplified because they're shown on CNN.
That's true. Yeah. Journalists. He has a lot of journalists on his feed, and that's an easy way to get a story. Here's what he's tweeting today.
It is newsworthy. I mean, I wouldn't knock them for reporting what he's tweeting, but go ahead, Terry.
The Times actually did a great analysis of his Twitter account very recently, and it did show that there are a large majority are Trump supporters on the platform. The other thing about Twitter, of course, is that there's debate about how many of these followers are real, but the estimates are that as many as half of his followers could be bots. But that still leaves 30 million, which is still further than I think Bernie Sanders has 9 million. So Trump is by far commanding the digital social media realm in a way that no elected official has ever done in the history of this country. Well, of course, we didn't have digital media back then either. But
anyway, Claude says... on the subject of rallies, do taxpayers pay for Trump's travel to rallies, which always turn out to be political? Yes. They are not government business, and the cost is high. I can't remember Obama holding so many rallies. Well, he didn't, number one. And number two, what these guys do is they always do the same thing. They find some non-political thing to do when they get there. They may inspect the... you know, a government facility, and that pays for the trip.
Okay. That's not a new thing, though, right?
No.
Okay.
That's not a new thing.
What do you mean it's not a new thing? Well, we haven't had presidents who had political rallies during they were busy governing.
No, that is a new thing.
Oh, really?
You mean like taking campaign trips and getting them to pay for it?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Because if you, I mean, all the presidents who go for a second term do this to some extent, right? They have to run.
Yeah, no.
Well, and they all travel around and give speeches. I mean, Obama came to this area, and I was at those speeches, and they were essentially political speeches. They were about all the great things that the administration was accomplishing. It's a fine line.
I'm thinking more of the new Washington Post David Fahrenthold's reporting on how his properties received hundreds of thousands of dollars of improvements that we paid for, that his sons are traveling around doing business for the company, and they get... we're paying for Secret Service and travel arrangements. I think that it is unprecedented the way that he's not taking his salary. He donates his salary, but he's taking millions in other dollars.
I think Fahrenthold reported that the cost of one round of golf or one golf outing was $28,000.
Sounds cheap to me. Jonathan said, New Yorkers moving to Florida. The New Yorkers that I know who are moving to Florida are voting for Trump. That isn't likely going to save Florida for the Dems. Many from rural areas like Stefanik's or like the little Trump in Rensselaer County that are Trumpians, as in the Deep South.
Well, they're also older, by and large, and older voters are more likely to vote for Trump.
I don't think so.
Well, Florida is just as divided geographically as New York is. Depends on what part of Florida you're talking about. Parts of Florida are very Democratic and have
parts
a lot of
the panhandle up there by Alabama.
Right, and then parts of it are very Republican, right? So it just depends.
Yeah. Okay, and then we heard from Ed in Akron. It says oligarch of both parties do not want impeachment. The Democratic leadership foot dragged on impeachment and are focusing on a tiny fraction of Trump's criminality because the super rich are making out like bandits. More corrupt, corporate-friendly judges are being appointed every day, and the possibility of another Supreme Court appointee looms. Every week Trump remains in office further cements long-term oligarch rule. Hard to argue with any of that.
Well, but removing him from office through the impeachment process, as we know, requires the Senate to pull the final lever, which we don't think they're going to do.
But he's saying Democrats don't really want to impeach him because they're part of the oligarchy and they're happy with the rich getting richer.
Everybody's entitled to their own opinion, but I do think that the Democrats have been correct to focus on this narrow path because they want to be able to communicate to the American people about a very specific breach of the law, and they know that when they start bringing in too many different issues, it gets complicated. It's already complicated. So I think they're taking the right approach.
Teresa writes, Booker has close ties to the pharmaceutical industry and Wall Street-sponsored charter schools. Not a progressive, despite the, quote, love talk. That's from Teresa. And John says, losing the House, does the panel now admit that the one possible outcome of this Democratic impeachment fiasco could be the loss of the House to the Republicans?
It happened for Newt in the last impeachment.
Seems like these exposed Dems in Trump districts are in pure panic over the slew of RNC ads that are targeting them on this topic. I'm sure you've all seen some of them.
Well, and that would be Delgado. I mean, Delgado was in a district that went pretty solidly for Trump, and now he's facing the prospect of a difficult vote on impeachment.
And John also says, will the highly charismatic Nadler turn the tide?
I don't know if he meant for that to be.
I'm not sure.
It is going to be interesting to see how he differs in handling this from Adam Schiff, who, you know, has shown great calm and patience throughout the process. I don't know if Nadler's capable of containing his temper in that same manner.
I think Nadler works for Pelosi, and whatever Pelosi says is going to happen is what's going to happen. So Karen says, Biden's occasional debate problem. When Joe Biden searches and hesitates and sometimes seemingly switches thoughts and words in mid-sentence, it does not mean his mind isn't sharp. He struggled, and still does, with a bad stutter in his youth and learned a technique to deal with a word he knew would cause him problems. He substitutes another word. I know that this is true, by the way. Stutterers are just as smart as the rest of us. I refer you to the film The King's Speech about George VI, Queen Elizabeth's father, an excellent leader with a sound mind who happened to have a speech impediment. Any one of those candidates can win in a debate with Trump, who sometimes appears practically brain dead. And that's from Karen. But I don't know.
I don't remember Biden having these problems before in debates. I mean, this seems like a relatively new occurrence.
Well, it is going around. People are talking about it.
Right. There's an article in this month's Atlantic about Biden's stutter. But maybe as you get older, it's harder to control.
Yeah, maybe that's the case. But when he debated as a vice president in the vice presidential, he was great. He was very good.
Discussions. Yeah. He was good that maybe the stutter problem is an invention to explain the problems he's having
Who's the country music musician?
Mel Tillis.
So maybe Biden should sing rather than.
Right.
Because when he sings, he doesn't have a stutter.
When he was on Johnny Carr on the Tonight Show, you're right. He would sing perfectly, and then Johnny would talk to him, and he would have a stutter. You make a point. Biden should sing. Can we get that on the Empire Report? Yeah, Shar Talk. Biden should sing.
Yeah, that will make the debate more interesting.
I will just point to all the polls that have come out in the last few days. Regardless of all of these flaws, he's still ahead and substantially ahead in some of the polls.
So just saw it on CNN on the crawl now.
How much does the American public really care about having a stuttering president?
Those are also all national polls, and
recognition
follows in. True. You know, plays a big role in this national. Polls. Yeah. In Iowa and New Hampshire, he's not doing that well.
Yeah. Okay.
Should the primaries all be on one day?
Yes.
And
no, absolutely not.
And how much does Iowa and New Hampshire even count? I mean, that's a whole other thing.
You calling me crazy?
Why would it be crazy to have them all on the same day?
Because it would cost infinitely more, and it would preclude the possibility of ever having a less wealthy candidate. I mean, it would have made Bernie's campaign impossible last time around. It probably would have made Obama's campaign possible. It would just put all the control, give the parties complete control over who the nominee is. I mean, you'd have to have a massive fundraising account going into the race rather than building it gradually.
Okay. Go ahead. I saw Terry nodding. Interesting. Yeah. Go ahead.
He wasn't nodding. He was nodding off.
No, he's not nodding off.
I'm just
fine. I'm out.
I'm just processing everything that Chris is saying, and I was waiting to see where he was going with that, and I thought he tied it up nicely.
I have to think about it.
Here it is
sure
on the CNN right now.
Any real
Biden maintains double-digit lead. Buttigieg surges. I mean, to what, 12%?
And Warren is dropping.
We already have a system that, you know, really does favor the wealthier candidates. Right. And, of course, you know, Bloomberg is coming in to prove that point right now.
Right. So and he's going to ignore these early states and just kind of blitz all the big states on Super Tuesday and think that that's the way he can win, and maybe it'll work. Who knows?
But these individual primaries are helping the lesser-known candidates sort of build a name for themselves.
I guess my question about should primaries be on the same day, much as I love New Hampshire, and it's about my favorite state, I would love to move to New Hampshire someday.
Would you? Because it's just sort of...
It's a great place. It's just tremendous. But why should that have an inordinate amount of influence, or Iowa as well?
I agree with you.
Well, that's a fair point, and there's no doubt a better system. But I don't think the better system is just everybody voting on the same day. Move the state around. You know, I mean, they have moved South Carolina up so that
interesting, like a rotation.
Why not?
I mean, why isn't it California or Texas or Alaska or New York first?
I'll tell you why. Because the day that you make a change, New Hampshire is going to make a change of its own, and the day after the presidential election will be the next primary.
Yeah.
I mean, ironically, this is a year where New Hampshire may not matter that much because because, you know, Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders are both going to do well there, and it's going to be simply because they're from neighboring states.
Yeah. Yeah. Russell says debates. The debates are theater, and often who won, in quotes, turns on a soundbite or video clip that gets repeated play and becomes the only takeaway. Trump is a terrible debater in a traditional sense, but it's always asymmetric war with him. It's undeniable he's been able to, so far, bend everything about running for and being president to suit his street thug skills honed in the rough and tumble of New York State real estate, professional wrestling, and reality television. Beating him will mean staying out of the mud with him and delivering surgical, memorable strikes that highlight what a disgrace it is for him to be president. Last thought, if he debates at all, it will be on his terms. Pardon me.
You need a lozenge.
No, and close to the election, when he thinks he has nothing to lose.
You know, how many people would like to see a real debate? I mean, a real debate, under real debate.
Old school.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. 8 hours of marathon. No.
Yeah. Lincoln-Douglas debates. The Lincoln-Trump debates.
There's no network that would take that on because it would be a, you know, they would lose money on it.
All right, listen.
Thinking of the scene from West Wing when the candidates threw aside their paper and said, all right, let's really duke it out. It was, like, inspiring.
We have to take a break here. Rosemary Arameo is here. Chris Churchill, Terry Gibson, Judy Patrick, Alan Shartok. It's the Roundtable panel. People are leaving, but Terry, don't go, because there's more to come. We have bonus time on the way.
I'm just going to say hi to my wife.
All right, fair enough. The email is panel at WAMC.org is the email address if you want to weigh in. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Roundtable on a Wednesday morning, 10:34. It's the day before Thanksgiving. The Roundtable panel, Judy Patrick, Terry Gibson, Chris Churchill, Rosemary Arameo, Alan Shartok, Ray Graff, for Joe Donahue. Hey, you know, at the Thanksgiving table, let's just do an informal poll of our panel here, starting with Rosemary. What?
Rosemary wants to talk about serious.
I know, all this
all right,
mushy
hang
stuff.
Come on.
What am I
come
thankful
on.
For?
Silence. Silence. No, what I'm going to ask you is, that's what I say to my kids, silence. It never works.
Yeah, it worked.
Do
for
you
us.
Talk politics at the Thanksgiving
of
table?
Of course.
Yeah?
What else?
Is Uncle Irving come? To the table?
Oh, no. It's like, this is how I train for the round table, is sitting with my family on Thanksgiving.
Does anybody disagree with you, or is everybody in agreement? Is it an echo chamber like Studio A is most of the time?
It's odd. It's like the round table. We're all basically liberal Democrats, and we all disagree on everything.
That's good. That's healthy.
And
how about
I'm not
you?
The loudest one.
Really? Mm-hmm. That's hard to believe. Judy?
We do not discuss politics. We don't. It's not by design. It's just that we have other things to talk about. And, you know, my family hates it because I make them go around the table and say what they're thankful for. They hate it. But I love it.
Yeah,
I think it's a great
rule. Is there a rule? I mean, we don't talk politics here.
No, it's not a rule. It's just that there are other
politics or religion.
There are other things. We'll probably be talking about the Black Friday shopping strategy. We'll probably be talking about what else we're going to do in the day.
Yeah, I'll miss those. I'll be working. But I bet they'll be good. How about you, Terry?
Well, it's complicated. It depends on where we are. If we go to my family's house, we do not talk about politics.
Trump,
because,
are they, are
because
they Trumpers?
Myself and Michelle are in a sea of red Republicans.
If we go to
Michelle's family's house, then we might very well talk politics because we're basically all liberal Democrats.
So you have to agree before you have
well,
to
no,
be in agreement
it's just,
before the...
you know it's not as the con- there's not conflict. Or,
yeah, gotcha.
So
you don't
more,
want
it's,
conflict.
It's more enjoyable conversation.
Agreed.
On the other side, it's not enjoyable, so we totally avoid it.
Yeah, it can get ugly.
We have very strict rules about the television cannot be turned on.
Wow.
And
what about the game?
What about
nothing,
the cell phones?
Nothing. Because
none of the football.
No, it's a long story, but you know. Fox News had found its way into our holidays, and I put a stop to that.
All right. What about you, Chris Churchill?
It doesn't come up at the table, but it comes up in conversations.
Yeah, and you're okay with that?
Yeah. I don't. It's not first and foremost in everybody's mind, I guess, so it doesn't – it's not – that – it's kind of like what Judy was saying. There are plenty of other things to talk about.
Do they defer to you as an expert?
No.
Oh.
No.
They should.
What about you, Alan?
Did they
I was raised in a home. Short talk is really yeah.
That's good.
Insert your own joke here.
In which there wasn't a meal that a plate wasn't flying. Somebody threw a plate. So that happened. I don't know what to say except that...
do you talk politics?
Yeah.
Okay, it's okay. Oh, it's not off the table.
Sure.
Okay, fair enough.
Sure we do.
What about at your house, Ray?
Basically, the very highbrow, hey, this onion dip's good. Oh, look, there's cheese over there. That's about it. Oh, the game's on. That's it. You know, that's how we roll.
Want to read some of these?
Yeah, could you?
America. Okay, and Tim says, too long, Tim. That's too long. Look at this.
Oh, man.
This letter is too long.
Okay, that's... Okay. Let it be shown that it's two medium-sized paragraphs.
It amazes me that anybody writes to us.
Okay. Tim says, punch drunk. The Republicans these days are a lousy boxer whose only chance of winning is they'll fight as dirty as they can get away with. They'll throw any elbow, knee, or headbutt that they can sneak in, even though everyone can see the naked cowardice and desperation. They still look like they're winning because they will still make the opponent hurt. I'm not reading the other two paragraphs.
Okay.
Too long.
Very good.
Impeachment from Charlie in Pine Bush. Simple question. Why can't this impeachment investigation be broadened to all the myriad accusations against Trump, such as conflict of interest in business dealings with Russia, business and sanctioned Russian oligarchs, Siberian oil fields, paying off porn stars with campaign money, profiting from government contract, etc.? Chris, I leave it to you to explain this to you.
Well, they certainly could. I mean, there's no reason they have to limit it the way they've limited it, but I guess they've just made the political calculation that it's better to do it this way, that it'll just seem like they're, you know, relitigating past issues if they do it otherwise.
And also, you're saving something for the next impeachment, right?
Well, that could happen, especially if the Democrats take the Senate. If the Democrats take the Senate and the House stays Democratic, which I believe it will, then I think what happens is you're going to get another crack at the onion.
Wishful thinking. This is like brokered conventions. It's not going to happen.
Thank you for that.
That's wishful thinking.
Charles says
that's
that he gets reelected and he gets impeached in the first. That sounds pretty awful.
Yeah.
Oh, now listen to this. He's totally mistaken.
Uh-oh.
Charles says only words. Now listen to this first sentence. Thank you for your lively and informed discussion.
Oh, you're way off.
It seems to me that impeachment and censure are only words and have no real consequences for a man who will still be president after these decisions will parenthesis possibly be made. Are there any real legal ramifications to these decisions? Parenthesis, should they be made? Or just another ingredient in a word salad that 45 can ignore or use to his advantage? Well, you can be sure he will do that. No matter what happens, he will spin it to his advantage. The base will say, yeah, give him hell, Harry. And everybody else will say, that's disgusting.
Well, on that note, one of the things that I'm actually just more concerned about is how all of this is going to play out before the Supreme Court. All of the decisions are ending up at the Supreme Court, and whether it's his tax returns, whether it's about who has to come testify, and you know, it's already a very conservative-leaning court, two of them of which have been appointed by him. If they continue to side with the president, I think we have a lot of questions to ask about the functionality of our democracy moving forward.
And also, you raise a very good point. That's about, true. You know, we get letters about people who say, oh, these judges are people who have studied the law and are impartial. No, they're held by a leash. Too bad. Norman says, would you please explain how the two-term limited Mike Bloomberg was able to serve three terms as a New York City mayor? It's one of my favorite subjects, as you probably all remember. New York City passed a law that said you could only run for two terms. And Bloomberg wanted a third term. So he proposed it to the city council. And the city council was going to get themselves a third term. You see what I'm saying? So in other words, there was no limit on them. They said, oh, yeah, boss, okay, we'll change it for you and for us, too. And they did.
And then when Bloomberg was elected to a third term, he immediately began arguing that future mayors should only be held to two terms.
Right.
Yeah.
Creative problem solver. There you go.
Daisy, says Cory Booker. As someone who listens to many podcasts, many interviews with these candidates, I can say that Cory suffers from long-windedness. He goes on and on with anecdotes, quoting philosophy and his parents, teachers, and so on. And on and on. But he has not
slogan on a baseball hat.
But he has not mastered the clean to the point answer. I think it has hurt him. I imagine he is like that during small gatherings in New Hampshire and Iowa. He gives you nothing to grab onto. I'm not a fan, Mayor Pete, but he is very good at that. Maybe too good.
But you know, Ray actually said it earlier. Just go back to Obama and his early campaigns. It was all about hope and change, hope and change, hope and change. And no Democratic candidate yet this cycle has really come up with the equivalent of hope and change. And that's what we need.
Judy, how you doing over there? You look
I'm doing tired. Fine. I'm thinking what people need is to be inspired by a leader that they can that they can follow, that they can trust. And I think that's what the Democrats are looking for. Maybe that's not what's bubbling to the surface at this point. Mm.
Okay, and then we've heard from Bob. The recent drop in polls for Warren is directly tied to her Medicare and for all proposal as a mandate. Telling people that you're going to take away their insurance and replace it with a government option is threatening to most people, even the left. And what I think is, once she was in the lead, she became the target, you know, for all the other guys. And so they were going to just get on her about this.
I mean, that is it's something you see over and over. Somebody becomes a front runner, they get attacked, and they fall back a little bit.
Sure. Yeah. Keith says, Rosemary is, in capital letters, wrong. Rosemary claims that everyone in capital letters would have understood if Hillary said she had pneumonia. Rosemary is 1,000% wrong.
Oh, wow, that's really wrong.
Felon Roger Stone.
She told me.
Felon Roger Stone, Alex Jones, and Tucker Carlson would not have understood. Twitter and Facebook would not have understood. The Russian bot armies would not have understood. Roger Stone was going around earlier this year saying that Hillary had Parkinson's. It's a good time to remind everyone that the White House is covering up Trump's unannounced weekend medical visit to the hospital. Please talk more about the president's slurred and incoherent speech.
Okay, I ended up agreeing with a lot of that.
Okay, good.
There were many forces against her.
Russ says, Delgado opponent. Antonio Delgado does have an opponent, Anthony German of Oneonta.
Yeah, there are actually several Republicans that have filed to run against him. One of them is a retired Army general, I believe.
Yeah, that's right. So
when I said he doesn't have an opponent, I meant it as the pollsters are currently looking at the district, they don't consider any of these current opponents to really be threats to his candidacy. There is one potential opponent out there that has not announced, and if that person just stepped forward, it might change.
And who is that?
Molinaro.
Mark Molinaro.
I can't say his name.
Why?
Because he doesn't want to.
His name is Mark Molinaro. That's
so stipulated. Name. Thank you, Chris.
Okay, John says, new developments. Good morning, panel. Why is everybody's opinion regarding the new FOIA document release regarding the impeachment investigation? Apparently, the White House disregarded the backdoor access to the documents and communications that were blocked from the Senate. There are 100 pages now, but we flood within the next few weeks. Also discuss the audio and visual release Giuliani, Soviet associate in Ukraine, who cut a deal to minimize his sentence.
All right, one more.
That's interesting stuff. Information, maybe bureaucrats are getting out information by responding to FOIs that are under the, not getting the attention that the Trump ones are. It's very
FOI
interesting.
FOI being a FOIA law, basically.
Yeah, freedom of information.
We have less than a minute.
Sorry.
Dear panel, what we seem to be overlooking is that the polls show that 50% of Americans not only want Trump impeached, they also want him removed from office. The highest percentage during the Clinton impeachment was 29%.
Right.
It's quite significant that half of the Americans want to get rid of the imposter in the White House.
Okay, well, listen, we'll have to leave it there. But really, very thankful for all of our listeners and for everybody who writes in to the panel all the time, even when we're not on the air. So thanks for that. Judy Patrick, Terry Gibson, Chris Churchill, Rosemary Armeo, Alan Shartok, thank you all. Anybody want to say anything nice
at
Thanksgiving?
I do, and thank you, Ray, because, you know, you've stepped into the breach. People love you. They love Joe, and they love you. And,
yeah.
And really, you're doing a terrific job. Thank you for
that. Well, while we're on the topic, let's wish Joe and his family a happy Thanksgiving. Yeah. And everybody listening, and there is plenty more roundtable ahead. I don't want you to think it's over, because there's a lot more ahead. We're just filling to the bottom of the minute, and we're done.